Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Our guest this week on Spectrum is Marcy Reaven. She is here from the New York Historical Society. Marcy, welcome to our program to China America Radio.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, now, you know, Historical Society I've been to on many occasions for many different exhibits throughout the year. There's a number of things that are there all the time. Then there are different exhibits that pop up that are specific interest. And the one that's there now is one certainly of interest to our audience, and it's all about the story of the immigrant Chinese. Tell me a little bit about, first of all, your background.
Well, I actually grew up in San Francisco, in the San Francisco area, and moved to New York many years ago, worked in documentary film, and then became very interested in history. So I started working in history museums and doing programs and projects about the history of the city and its people, and realized that I loved making exhibits. There's something particularly interesting to me about that process. And so over the years, I did more and more of that particular kind of work, and a few years ago became the vice president for history exhibits at New York Historical Society.
The exhibit that's there now, what's the official name of it? What's the working title of the project?
The title is Chinese American Exclusion Inclusion.
This is actually part of a number of immigration-based exhibits that the Historical Society has had over a period of time, correct?
Yes, the museum's been on has embarked on an initiative some years ago about being an American, what it means to be an American. And so many of those shows have dealt with the topic of immigration, but also other kinds of subjects which relate to that theme. So, for example, we did some groundbreaking exhibit some years back about the African-American slavery in the North, which was a topic that surprised many people. So, again, that was about being American. I did an exhibition about New York's long relationship with the Spanish-speaking world, around that, under the rubric of that initiative. So it's been fascinating.
Was there any particular moment that the decision was made to go with the Chinese subject this time?
Well, Louise Meir, who's the president of New York Historical, visited the Museum of Chinese in America when it reopened a few years back on Center Street. It's a wonderful museum. And Louise was extremely impressed with their rendition with their exhibits and with their rendition of the Chinese American story, and thought that as a U.S. history museum, her museum, the New York Historical, should tell a version of that story as well. So we embarked on that a couple of years ago.
Did it have anything to do with the burgeoning visibility of the Chinese community in the United States and on the world stage?
Well, we're certainly aware that immigration numbers are large from China and from Asia, and that there's many Chinese Americans in New York and around the country. But we also wanted to make a case for the very long presence of Chinese Americans here. So, yes, we were very interested in the contemporary audiences, but also wanted to point out that Chinese have been part of U.S. society for many, many years now.
Growing up in San Francisco, obviously you were exposed to Chinese communities at a very early age. Do you recall your first brush with the Chinese culture?
I don't think I have specific memories. For many people, non-Chinese and Chinese restaurants play an important role in one's life and everyday celebrations. And that certainly was true with me, but there were Chinese American students in the schools that I went to and in my neighborhoods. So I don't think there was a particular first moment.
You said a while ago you enjoyed putting together exhibits. This exhibit starts quite a ways back, actually, probably further back than most people remember in terms of Chinese history in the United States, with the ships that brought people here, with a lot of the different rules and regulations and immigration and people and personalities that came long before we can start really remembering about Chinese communities in the United States, but Chinese people interacting from one continent to the other. A lot of pretty intense historical research would have to have gone into something like that. Was that the sort of thing you really relished about this?
I think it's true to say that I probably learned more doing this project than I have ever learned doing any other project in my life. And I'm often working on topics where I have a very large learning curve. So the process of learning is a familiar one, but I had a lot to learn here. But I had fabulous help. So Jack Chan, who helped to found Museum of Chinese in America, was our chief historian, for example. We had a great crew of historians and lawyers from all over the country who have been really the pioneers in working on Chinese American history. Also private collectors. You know, it's really important that people pay attention to their own family and community history and save it, because it's there then for people like me when I want to come around and say, can you loan us, you know, a coaching book? Can you loan us some of your family photographs? So from all of these kinds of people, we got enormous amount of help and worked with them throughout the process.
We hope everyone has at some point been to the New York Historical Society. If not, tell our audience where it's located and a little bit about the organization and what they'll see when they get there.
Well, New York Historical is really one of the oldest cultural institutions in the country. It's kind of amazing. It began in 1804, so we've been around a long time. We're located at the corner of 77th Street and Central Park West, so right next to the Museum of Natural History across from Central Park. We are an art and a history museum, so whenever one comes, you can usually see both kinds of exhibits. And we have one of the major libraries about New York City in the country. So lots of school kids visit, lots of families visit. We have a children's history museum downstairs, so very young children come, or to the upper grade school years, come with their parents to take part in the museum. And we do a lot of after school and evening performances and events. So we're really almost an all week, all hours institution with a lot of variety.
Unlike your next door neighbor, the Natural History Museum, which is vast, Historical Society is manageable. It is something that you can digest, in a nice leisurely visit that won't leave you, gosh, we still have 4/5 of the place to see by the time you leave. So it's really quite good, an excellent gift shop, I might add, with some nice things. What's the website address for the Historical Society, so folks can maybe get a little preview of what they might run into?
It's www.nyhistory.org.
Tell me and tell our listeners, please, about the exhibit, the Chinese exhibit, and the inclusion-exclusion. When did you start the timeline, and when did you complete the timeline for this exhibit?
The exhibition starts with the American Revolution. So the first ship that left from the United States, the new United States, to China, left from New York in 1784, right after we won the American Revolution. And the exhibition goes all the way up until the present. So we cover a good couple of centuries and many topics within that.
I found when I went through the exhibit a lot of the information, because I've been pretty close with the Chinese community working with the radio station for the past few years. When you look at the numbers today and the influence of the Chinese community in the United States today, everything from the financial worth of the community, seems like all of that effort, all of those laws, all of those things were so vain to see where we actually are today and how futile the attempts were in those days to subject a group of people to second-class status for a long time. Yeah.
You know, the Chinese Exclusion Act, it was a very interesting act historically, because it was the first act to ever restrict a group of people based on race and class from emigrating. And it also prevented all Chinese from naturalizing as U.S. citizens. So it made a huge difference in the American system. Before that, anybody could come. But those laws, which passed in 1882 and which lasted until 1943, ended up greatly impacting all of American society, because that whole idea that one could be selective about who could be an American and selective about who could immigrate, then went on to influence many different kinds of people, or to be applied to many different kinds of people. So by 1924, no Asians were allowed to emigrate to the U.S., and Eastern and Southern Europeans, largely Jews and Italians, were restricted from coming on that same basis of race and class. And these racial restrictions didn't actually lift for many people until the 1960s. So it had a large impact. But despite this kind of discrimination, Chinese Americans were fighting back really from the very beginning. I mean, they began in the 1870s pushing back against the discrimination. Once the Chinese exclusion law passed, they were very active in the courts all around the country, pushing back against immigration restrictions, against naturalization restrictions, against discriminatory laws of all kinds. And then, in addition to that, people just did their best to make good lives for themselves and to bring in their families, to get around the laws, to bring in their families, to create businesses, to try to prosper as best as they could. So it's a pretty remarkable story, both of discrimination but also of struggle against that and achievement.
My guest is Marcia Reaven. She's here from the New York Historical Society that has an incredible exhibit now through April on the Chinese immigrant stories coming into the United States and what it is to become an American citizen. If you think about it, Marcia, the struggles that you just mentioned and the Chinese pushing back almost from the very beginning was something that wasn't unique to the United States. The Chinese culture has been pervasive at doing that same thing globally. They didn't just find resistance when they came to this country. They found it pretty much everywhere that the Chinese boats would take, you know, their people, whether it's South America or Europe or Africa. So when you see this plan, this pattern, almost on a global scale, it's pretty remarkable.
It is, and the countries learn from each other. You know, that's one thing that historians have come to realize more and more over the last years, that it doesn't make sense when one's looking at a historical topic to just look at one country, because these kinds of shared ideas across country lines are really important to note, you know, both when they're negative ideas and also when they're positive ideas and positive movements. So I think the point that you raise is a good one. We weren't able to tell more than a U.S. story in this particular exhibit, but maybe in the future we'll have that opportunity.
Well, it might be interesting to note that today, as we are doing this interview, that the immigration of Chinese into the United States is approximately 65,000 per year, for which there are over 100,000 applications. And then there's a lottery that is held to determine which of the 110,000, 120,000 applications get to be part of the 65 that are chosen. And then a number of legal matters have to be met for that to happen. But when you consider the immigration numbers from 100 years ago versus 65,000 a year, it's rather daunting, isn't it?
Yeah, immigration is one of the important topics of our age. Although our immigration story doesn't go into the details of the present, that we've been happy to see from the comments that visitors have left us that they've really appreciated having some historical viewpoint on the current day immigration. It helps them to try to understand where our system today has come from, and it helps them think about, kind of create their own ideas about what they think about the immigration system today.
And I believe, and perhaps you'll agree, that when we hear politicians speak of immigration, it tends to be somewhat myopic about immigration basically on our own borders, rather than the fact that immigration reform generally affects people from every country that want to come to this country.
Certainly, and it's important to pay attention to who is it that wants to come to the country, because the rules that govern how many people can get in from where don't always match up with the great pools of people who want to get in. And that mismatch can lead to those long waiting lists and heartache for many.
Well, one thing that has certainly changed is that in the historical times, the late 1800s, early 1900s, there weren't that many Westerners that were setting up shop in China. They did in Shanghai and Hong Kong and a few other places, mostly for trade. Now we have as many Americans wanting to go there, not only as tourists, but also in a commercial sense, as there are coming here. And that's kind of a nice turnabout. Who would have thought that we'd be crawling all over ourselves to set up shop in Shenzhen or someplace, you know, in China these days?
No, it's a fascinating turn of events. And you can also see that with college students, with students of all kinds. And that's a story we do tell in the exhibition. Chinese students started coming here in the 1870s, which is quite amazing. A man named Yang Wing brought over the first students in the 1870s, and they lived with families in the Northeast and went to school and, you know, continued to learn about Chinese culture while they learned about American culture. It was an important beginning to a process which continued over the years. So many Chinese students have come here. And finally, you know, in the last decades, U.S. students are going to China and reversing that trend. So it's terrific to see that balancing out.
Yes, it is. It is intriguing to hear how many people now are studying Mandarin in high school and even elementary school. Pretty much every series of colleges in the United States, whether it's the Big Ten or the Pac-10, have an abundant percentage of Chinese students on their campuses. And it's just an amazing turn of events.
And I think that increased interest in all things China and Chinese is driving a lot of interest in our exhibit, too. So many Chinese Americans are coming and visiting and telling us that they're learning even much more than they knew about Chinese American history. But many others are coming too. So many people who are studying Chinese, who are going to China, who are reading about China every day in the newspaper, who are aware of large and interacting with large Chinese American and Asian American communities here are coming to the exhibit and making intellectual and emotional connections as well.
I know when I saw the exhibit, it was a pretty eclectic cross-section of visitors that was there. It was busy. It's the exhibit is interactive. There are things you can see and touch and feel and read and experience that puts you in the moment that would have been the moment that a Chinese immigrant might have found themselves in when they came here. Marcy Reeven is here, and she's from the New York Historical Society. The exhibit goes through April.
April 19th.
And it's fascinating. I hope that all of our listeners have a chance to go there. There are other things to see while you're there, so it would not just be the Chinese exhibit. You can spend some time looking at the other things that are there. I want to thank you very much for coming on and telling the story of the Historical Society and of the exhibit that you now have, the New York Historical Society, 77th and Central Park West. C train, any B train will take you there. Our A train on the weekends. But thanks for coming by and telling us about it, and good luck.
Well, thank you very much. It's been fun to be here.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.